It's time for From the Short Grass with Trey Schaap, a golf podcast for those who love golf, struggle with golf, and just like to enjoy the outdoors and fellowship with friends, all while chasing a ball around trying to put it in a 4 1/4 inch diameter hole. From the Short Grass is brought to you by Stevens Incorporated, an independent financial services firm with the freedom to focus on what matters most. Blackman Auctions. For over 80 years, better auctions have always been Blackman Auctions. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels. We partner with you to deliver high-yield results by managing, developing, and investing in top-quality hospitality assets. And now, from the Short Grass, here is your host, Trey Schaap.
Welcome to another edition of From the Short Grass. I am your host, Trey Schaap. Victor Hovland wins the PGA Tour Championship and the FedEx Cup at East Lake Country Club in Atlanta. Hovland finished with rounds of 68, 64, 66, 63 for a 5-shot victory over Xander Schauffele. With the win, he pockets $18 million and is playing his best golf ever heading into the Ryder Cup coming up in September. Coming up after the break, I introduce you to one of the best amateur golfers to ever come from the state of Georgia. Danny Yates grew up in Atlanta, and I traveled there for this sit-down interview with a 2-time player in the Walker Cup and also a 2-time captain of Team USA in the Walker Cup. Danny was the runner-up to the 1988 U.S. Amateur and won the 1992 USGA Mid-Am Championship. He was inducted into the Georgia Golf Hall of Fame in 1994, and you will learn about him after the break. Since 1938, better auctions have always been Blackman Auctions. Go to their website, blackmanauctions.com, to see their full list of upcoming auctions. We're back with Danny Yates after this.
Strength is measured not by the number of accounts. Strength is placing value on relationships. It's having the vision and the guts to invest in growth. It's the commitment to responsibly manage your money. At Stevens, we believe that our strengths build success, not only for us, but for our clients. Stevens, member NYSE, SIPC.
With all the decisions you need to make about what to do in El Dorado, finding a place to stay is an easy one. The Haywood is uniquely positioned to make your stay one to treasure. Located in the historic Union Square District of El Dorado, the Haywood offers luxurious accommodations that feature contemporary, colorful rooms with high-quality bedding, comfortable baths with walk-in showers, and a spacious workspace with stylish plantation shutters that are unique additions to the stunning decor in a non-smoking environment. Make the Haywood your home away from home the next time you visit El Dorado.
I'm Thomas Blackman with Blackman Auctions. I've heard it said that sometimes there are two best days with real estate ownership. It's the day you buy it and the day you sell it. Depending on where you are in your journey, let me help. If you're looking for that outdoor getaway or that home in the city, I can help. If you're looking at selling that outdoor property you haven't seen in 3 years, I can help. Or selling that home in the city that you've outgrown, I can help. Blackman Auctions is your one-stop real estate company. Since 1938, better auctions are Blackman Auctions.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Short Grass. I recently traveled to Atlanta, Georgia, where the history of golf runs deep, with the great Bobby Jones at the top of that list. Danny Yates is definitely on that list, too. He was born to play the game, and in this first part of a 2-part episode, you will learn about how Danny Yates began playing the game of golf and where it took him. On the tee, Danny Yates.
Mr. Yates, thanks so much for joining me on From the Short Grass. It was a pleasure to meet you at the home of golf in St. Andrews, Scotland, and it's good to come here to Atlanta to sit down with you. And doing some research on this, I didn't realize what a talented golfer you were, and not just you yourself, but the family that you were basically born into.
Well, my father and his brother grew up at East Lake behind Bobby Jones, and that's how they got involved in the game, and then I followed suit. I mean, golf was what we did.
did you come out of the womb with a golf club in your hand?
No. But, you know, we were little. My father would take us out to the golf course. And I got really, I guess, really interested at probably 12 years old, something like that.
Is that about the first time you picked up a club?
No. But I played tennis as a little kid. And then I made a decision. I'm trying to remember when it was. I loved it. And I had, and the good news was I had a lot of good friends that we played growing up. And I've always said that, you know, if you got a group of buddies you could go play with, it makes it that much better. And a lot of, unfortunately, I don't know if that's quite the same as it was back when we came along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, growing up back then, I mean, there wasn't much to do in the summers.
Played baseball, Little League baseball. That ended in June, so you had the rest of the summer to play golf or whatever, tennis, whatever.
You mentioned that your dad and your uncle were friends of Mr. Bobby Jones. I mean, a legend when it comes to
golf. Primarily my uncle, because Jones was about 10 or 12 years older, but they played a lot of golf. My father was younger and, you know, followed him around, but my father never really played any golf.
What kind of stories did they tell you?
Oh, man. I got a bunch of them, if I can remember them. But, you know, not only them, but just listening to some of the things he did were, you know, not only his amateur record or whatever, but, you know, what he did for the game and for people, and just amazing.
Your father attended every Masters tournament that was held until, I believe, 2014 or maybe a little bit later than that.
I think
16, maybe?
At least 15. I know he didn't go, maybe 16. He'd gotten a little bit feeble. I know he threw 15. I could go look it up. But he saw every one of them because his brother played in the very first one.
Mm-hmm. His brother played in how many, though? 11?
I don't know, a bunch, until right after the war. And he told me he was in the Navy and on a ship for about 5 years and literally just lost his game. Not, you know, he said, I couldn't hit the ball anywhere. I was, he played in the Masters, I think, right after the war, and then figured out it was time, that it took a toll on him.
When did your dad first take you down to Augusta?
1962.
You were 12 years old.
I was 11.
Before your birthday.
Yeah. And, you know, we were all big Arnold Palmer fans, little kids, and I was really serious about it then. And he went to my sixth grade teacher and said, I'm going to let him go to the Masters if you give him permission. It's all dependent on his behavior in school. And I did all right in school, but the guy, right before the Masters, he said, I need somebody to swim in a swimming meet. And I knew how to swim, but I wasn't a swimmer. So I had to do the breaststroke, and I did it. It came in second, and he told my old man that, okay, he can go. But I was on my best behavior, and we went over there, and a good buddy's of mine, and we watched Arnold Palmer every shot Saturday and Sunday. It was amazing. He won in a playoff, but made a big comeback.
Yeah.
But it made a big impression.
Mr. Palmer seemed almost larger than life to me when I was growing up, and, I mean, several years after you, but in the videos that I've seen and then going to Bay Hill and seeing everything that he did there, I mean, he was the king, wasn't he?
He was, in my opinion, definitely. Treated everybody well.
Mm-hmm.
Never thought he was a big shot, in my opinion. I played the Masters with him and treated me like a friend. I had met him maybe once in my life. But, I mean, genuinely, and everybody I've ever talked to that played in the Masters with him as an amateur said the same thing.
What was it like growing up here in Atlanta, though, around the sport of golf? You mentioned Eastlake and the history there. Obviously, the Tour Championship is there every year.
Well, we grew up not far from here at Capital City Club in Brookhaven, 3-4 miles from here. And that's where I played. But my grandparents lived at Eastlake. Mm-hmm. So I still went out there some. And then as I got a little better, they had some good players out there, and I'd ride the bus out there. A guy named David Barnes was, at the time, one of the absolute best junior golfers in the country. So I'd go out there and play. But, you know, we knew about Jones. It was obvious, and especially at Eastlake. And they had the Ryder Cup in, I think it was 63. And we went out. Palmer was on that team. But it was fun. I mean, we really, really it was just everywhere, and people talked about it. They didn't beat you over the head with it, but I think it made it more special, and especially going to the Masters. You know, you had more of a sense of the game.
When did you know that you could play on a national level and compete against some of the best?
I went to the Open my junior year. I qualified. I'd played in the junior amateur in high school, and I did all right. But then when I made the Open and made the cut, I honestly wasn't in the league, Lanny Watkins and Crenshaw and those guys that I played against. But I figured I could play amateur golf, pro golf. I played all right in the Open, made the cut.
But tough golf course, too, the East Course at Marion.
Yeah, but I really never had plans to turn pro. I like the amateur game.
Why is that?
Well, I think my father helped explain to me the difficulty of playing the tour, the grind, the money. And there wasn't any money. When I was a junior in college, top 60 money winners made $60,000. And, you know, you had to qualify on Monday if you didn't make the top 60. I was in the National Guard, so I had that every month. But I really enjoyed just playing with my friends. I came close to thinking about it, but then it becomes a job. And I had a decent job in the insurance business, so got to play some golf. So it just all worked out.
You decided to go to the University of Georgia to play your college golf, and you guys were, as a team, were pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, 71-72 SEC championships. What do you remember about that, and was it an easy decision to go to Georgia?
Everybody in my family were Georgia Tech guys, and Tech really didn't have a very good golf program back then, and had a lot of close friends that went to Georgia, which made it easier. And I went up there, and I qualified for the junior amateur there when I was, 10th grade that summer. And really liked the place, the golf course. We played matches up there in high school. And it was close by, but I had a lot of really good friends there. Mm-hmm. It was just a great – I was recruited by the University of Florida, but not for me. It was really for David Barnes and Lanny Watkins and those guys. And I wasn't offered anything. And I wasn't at Georgia either. But I just really liked Athens and the feel, golf course, the people.
What do you remember about that back-to-back SEC championship?
Well, my freshman and sophomore year we won it, but I wasn't on the traveling team. In those days, they had moved it, I think, my sophomore year to Callaway Gardens, and that's where it was for several years. But it was just fun. You know, I really had not played on a championship team and really hadn't played any team golf till I got to college. But I can remember it was a special deal.
Did they take care of you on campus? I mean, did they do all the hoopla now that they do for an SEC championship?
I'd say 98% of the students had no clue that we won the SEC. But, I mean, it was just fun. I mean, it was self-satisfying, especially with your pals.
Was it tough to play golf back then when it wasn't popular?
Not really. I was very fortunate. My father's a member of private club, and no. I mean, we were restricted when we could play during the day, but no. But I really had, even today, three or four of my absolute closest friends I grew up playing golf with.
Golf teaches you life lessons, doesn't it?
Sure does.
In what ways for you?
Well, I mean, play by the rules, respect the game, respect your competitors. You know, I was just blessed to see that with the people older than me. You know, you hang around older people or play in tournaments with older people. And like Nicholas said years ago, if you're playing with older guys, you're going to get better. Or they're going, you know, if you don't act right, they're going to beat you up. So I just think it was great to be around so many really good people that grew up in the game.
You were runner-up in the 1988 U.S. Amateur. What stands out to you about that championship?
It was special. I had just started playing. Our kids had gotten a little older. It wasn't like that I had not played, but I told my kids, I said, I really want to make a run the next summer to try to make the Walker Cup team. And what do y'all think about being gone a little bit? And they didn't bother them. They didn't need me around. But it was special. I can still – you know, the sting of losing still sits there, but I the other guy played a lot better. But, I mean, it was special because I had played in the mid-am and done okay there and been to the quarters. But getting the finals, obviously gotten the Masters, mm-hmm. and I made the world amateur team after that, but that wasn't a given. It was just a really special thing that I played college golf with a guy named Alan Miller, who played the tour, played on the Walker Cup, the world amateur. But he's called me, said, now you know you can do it. You can do it. I didn't win, but I could play a little bit. Mm-hmm. So he said, now you know you can do it. And that means a lot when you know you can do it.
You won the 1992 mid-am. You said that you'd played in the mid-am a little bit. You were at 42 when you won the mid-am, if my math is correct.
Yep.
What was that like? I mean, both of those are grueling tests of golf, both of those tournaments.
Well, I had been in the semis the previous 3 years, and it's kind of funny. I'd played in the amateur at Carnoustie that fall, right before that, and it was very windy. And I came to Detroit a few weeks later, and the backside, I don't know why, but it was windy, not like it was in Scotland. But I really felt like playing in the British amateur really helped because I played in the wind. And I won, I'd have to think, but I won two or three matches on the last hole. I went to the final hole. And I really felt like, it was funny, I didn't feel like I was playing as good in that one as I had a couple other ones, but the right things happened and I won.
Isn't it funny that sometimes that's what people call golf?
Yeah, I've always said, you know, playing golf, playing good golf, that doesn't mean you're hitting the ball better or putting better. It's just everything's together. So, I mean, I've played some decent golf when I really felt like there were some holes in my game, but it just somehow you offset the weaknesses.
Did you ever go to a pro or were you self-taught?
No, my father helped, and we had a pro across the street named Bill Barker helped me. And then Davis Love's father, Davis Love Jr., moved to Atlanta, I think in about 65, and he helped me a lot, played golf. He showed me how to play Atlanta Country Club right before the Open qualified. And he said, let me show you how to play this golf course. And I think that was why I qualified. I played the course a lot, mm-hmm. but he just said, this is how to do it. He was a very smart guy, really knew how to play. He was by far the best pro in Atlanta. He was by far the best player. He qualified for the Open nearly every year. And then I went up to Marion and I played a practice round with him. He said, let me show you some more stuff that really helped.
What did he show you?
Short shots and just the way to think. And one thing he helped me out of the high grass. I'd never played in really high, I guess that's fescue or bent. And he just showed me some shots and it paid off. But he was really a good player.
Obviously, with your runner-up finish, USAM in 88, you were invited to play in the Masters. You had been down there plenty of times.
Right.
Do you remember the reaction, Mr. Yates, when you got that invitation? What went through your mind when you saw it, that you were invited to play in the Masters tournament?
They send the invite in a formal, wedding kind of looking thing. And I remember coming home, and there it was in the mailbox. And I still have it somewhere. And it looks like an engraved, you know, somebody's getting married, can you come to the wedding? And the same thing. And it's funny, though. I thought it was said that the finals still got invited to the Masters. They had trimmed down the number of amateur players. But, I mean, that's something you think about every single day. And it was a good feeling, but it was pressure, too.
Now, you had been down Magnolia Lane before, but not playing as a competitor. What was that turnoff of Washington Avenue like?
It was special, like nothing that I'd ever done before, and probably nothing I've ever done since.
Who was with you?
Well, I went over there by myself. My wife was at home with the kids, so I just drove over there on a Monday afternoon, and I was all by myself, and I was having a great time.
I can imagine. can imagine what that was like. You were a member of the 88 World Golf Team representing the United States. What was it like to represent the U.S. on a world stage?
Ooh, that was the first time I'd ever done anything like that, and it was special. But I mean, the pressure, you just felt it all day long. I hadn't really played much team stuff at all since I played in our state team stuff, but I had not played probably in 15 years since college.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to let down your teammates. And it was a lot of fun, but every shot to me was pressure.
The Walker Cup is coming up at St. Andrews over in Scotland. You were selected to your first Walker Cup team in 1989. Did that have a different feel than the world team because of the prestigiousness of the Walker Cup?
You know, I felt like Jay Sigel had said, wait till, we played in Sweden in the World Amateur. And he said, wait till you get on the first tee at the Walker Cup. I said, well, how can it be any different? But it was. I mean, it was different. And it was more, I thought, more pressure.
How was it different besides just the pressure?
Well, you just got a team, and it's match play. In the World Amateur team, it's your three best scores out of four.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you didn't play so well, somebody else could have picked you up. But you got to win those points. If you lose a point, that hurts the whole group.
Fred Ridley, who is the chairman of Augusta National right now, was the captain of your 89 Walker Cup team. He came to you, asked you a question about a foursomes partner. Do you remember what he asked you?
He just said, would you like to try Phil Mickelson? I said, yeah. I felt like at the time he'd won the NCAA, and I felt like he was probably the best player on the team, or one of them. You had Robert Gomez on there, was playing real well. So I said, sure. I said, I'll ride him just like anybody else. But we hit it off. He was a lot of fun.
What was it like playing with him in foursomes, and what holes did you hit the tee shots on, and what holes did he hit the tee shots on?
The way the course set up, I'd hit the odd shots, 1, 3, 5, et cetera. The par fives were 2 and 16 and 10, so he was longer. And we hit those. He drove it there where I could knock it on the green.
Y'all make a pretty good team?
Yeah, well, I let him down the first. We halved the first match. And the next day, I did not play well, and he played a lot better. So I felt like all along I cost us the match. But he was a good guy, a lot of fun.
You also made the team again in 93. Did it feel any different than when you made it in 89?
It was very satisfying, but I'm going to tell you, the pressure didn't change. We had a really good team that everybody was playing well, and everybody at the same time was playing well. Sometimes you can have a team where a couple of guys made the team off the year before's record and are struggling. It was in Minnesota, but everybody on the team was playing well. So it made it a lot more fun.
That camaraderie of a Walker Cup and the team concept and being in those rooms, can you take us inside as a competitor what it was like being inside those team rooms?
In Atlanta, I'm trying to think. We didn't have – I don't think we'd had – Jay Sigel had played. I'm not sure we had any other guys on the team that had the experience of playing previously. And Alan Doyle was probably our best player, and he got hurt, so he couldn't play. But at Interlochen in 93, you had Justin Leonard and Alan. And Alan had a real good way about engaging the younger guys. Hell, Alan was older than I am. He was probably close to 45, and I was 43. But he really knew how to get the guys going, bet them, do this, do that. But we had a lot of camaraderie, and Alan – he was sort of the team leader.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that he gave everybody confidence.
That's just part one with Mr. Danny Yates. You will hear more in our next episode with him. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group, Matthew Allen, Blair Allen, they know how to manage hotel properties. When you need an overnight place to stay, make sure you go to their website, bphotels.com, find one of their properties, and book it. That's all you have to do. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group, one of our great sponsors of From the Shortgrass. We're back after this. Stay with us.
This is Thomas Blackman with Blackman Auctions. Looks like this podcast has really taken off. The guests are incredible. Stories are captivating. It might be Trey's hard work and dedication to the sport of golf and his sincere interest in his guests. Or could be the support of an 85-year-old auction company that does real estate and industrial auctions all over the country and is owned by a guy that doesn't play golf worth a flip. You guys listen to the podcast. I think you know the answer. If you want to learn about the game of golf, listen to Trey. If you want to know about auctions, call me. Since 1938, better auctions are Blackman Auctions.
Traveling to Fayetteville to watch a game? Forgot to book a room for the night? Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group has you covered. Stay where the fans stay. Staybridge Suites is just south of Baum Walker Stadium and is an all-suite hotel within walking distance of Baum Walker, Bud Walton, and Razorback Stadium. Or you could stay at the Comfort Inn and Suites with newly remodeled rooms throughout the entire property. Find them on the web at bphotels.com. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Shortgrass. It's time for our rules segment. On the tee, PGA Master Professional Adam Carney.
Adam, this comes in from Jack in Searcy. He says, hello, I have a question for your rules guy. Adam, that would be you.
That's me.
Yes. What does the term local rule mean?
I'd have to look. I'm not sure local rules actually. At one time, that was in the appendix of the rule book. I'm not sure it's still in there. Typically, what we call it is conditions of competition. So the rules or the rule book gives the committee, and every tournament per se has to have a committee. So if you're at a open, you know, championship, the committee is going to consist of the RNA and anyone duly appointed by the committee to be an official or anything like that. At a club event, it may be just your home golf professional, a committee of one. So a local rule in air quotes here is a condition of competition. So for example, we used to have a rule that said if a player was late to the tee, he was disqualified, but there was a condition of competition that was adopted in every competition that if they're there within 5 minutes and ready to play, then they would incur a 2-stroke penalty in stroke play or loss of hole in match play.
But they would be allowed to play. Yeah.
But that condition of competition or air quote local rule had to be in effect. So it had to be in writing, a notification given to the players that effect was in effect. Now on the PGA Tour, just about every tour in the world has what we call a hard card. And that hard card is a conditions of competition for every single event. Let's just use the PGA Tour as an example. For every single PGA Tour event, the hard card is in effect. And that is adopting, again, local rules or conditions of competition that are not in the rules, but the committee may choose to adopt. Mm-hmm. They're in effect for every single PGA Tour event every week. Then on the notice to competitors, which, you know, we call it a rule sheet kind of in mm-hmm. normal terms, but we call it a notice to competitors. In that information, you may have some additional things based on the golf course that you're playing, on the conditions, things like that. Lift, clean, and place would be an example of a condition of competition. Let's say the first round, hey, we're going to have to lift, clean, and place. So it's going to be, I mean, I would print it out and I would give it to each player on the first tee and say, hey, today and today only, we are playing lift, clean, and place.
And you could put the date on there if you wanted
to. Always dated it.
Yeah.
And which round we were playing. This is a condition of competition for today and is a notice to the competitors.
My thanks for Adam Carney, as always, for our great rules segments. And if you have a question on the rules of golf, send us an email fromtheshortgrass@gmail.com and we'll get it to Adam and we will get it answered. The Walker Cup begins at St. Andrews. It's the United States amateurs against amateurs from Great Britain and Ireland, taking place at St. Andrews, the home of golf. Make sure you tune in and watch some of that fantastic golf action. Thanks for listening to this episode of From the Shortgrass. In our next episode, part two with Danny Yates. Remember, when you find your ball mark on the green, make sure you repair it and then look for a couple of more ball marks around the green. Fix those as well. Your course superintendents will thank you. And you are helping make the green better for those that play behind you. I hope to see you soon from the Shortgrass.
You've been listening to From the Shortgrass, a weekly podcast dedicated to the game of golf. This has been a presentation of the Buzz Radio Network.